The Wine of Angels, written by Phil Rickman, read by Rebecca Lacey. Merrily had a recurring dream. She'd read somewhere that it was really quite a common dream, with obvious symbolism. By recurring, well, she'd have it maybe once every few months, or the gaps might be even longer nowadays. There was a period not long before Sean died, when it came almost nightly, or even in that intense and suffocating period, twice or three times the same night. She'd close her eyes, and the dream would be waiting there like an empty train by a deserted platform. Sometimes it was merely puzzling. Sometimes it seemed to open up exciting possibilities. Occasionally, it was very frightening, and she awoke shredded with dread. What happened? She was in a house. Not always the same house, but it was her own house, and she'd lived there quite some time without realizing. Or sometimes she'd just forgotten she'd gone on living there, possibly for years, without registering that the house had a third floor. It was clear that she'd lived quite comfortably in this house, which was often bright and pleasant, and that she must have passed the extra staircase thousands of times, either unaware of it, or because there was simply no reason to go up there. In the dream, however, she had to go up there, with varying amounts of anticipation or cold dread, because something up there had made its presence known to her. She'd nearly always awaken before she'd make it to the top of the stairs, either disappointed or trembling with relief. Just occasionally, before her eyes opened, she would glimpse a gloomy, airless landing with a row of grey doors. In reality, if you excluded flats, she had never lived in a three-story house. Now, however. Jesus, Merrily said, we can't live in this. Yes, I suppose it is big, Uncle Ted conceded. Didn't think about that. Never a problem for Alf Hayden, 6 kids, endless grandchildren. It was big, all right. 17th century, timber-framed, black and white, 7 bedrooms. Absolutely bloody huge if there was just the two of you. Very quaint, but also unexpectedly depressingly grotty. Nothing seemed to have altered since about the 1950s. Of course, it's church policy these days to flog off these drafty old vicarages, Uncle Ted said. Replace them with nice modern boxes, worth a lot of money, your old black and whites. Well, not this one at present, not in the state it is after 30-odd years of Alf and Betty. There was quaint, Merrily thought, and there was horribly old-fashioned. Like the steel-grey 4-bar electric fire blocking up the ingle nook. Like a kitchen the size of a small abattoir with no real cupboards but endless open shelves, and all the pipes coiled under the sink like a nest of cobras. Besides, Ted said, we haven't got any nice modern boxes to spare. 3 applications for housing estates have been turned down in as many years, not in keeping. He frowned. Conservation's a fine idea, but not when it turns a nice old village into an enclave of the elite. In his habitual cardigan and slippers, Ted Clowes, 2 years retired, didn't look at all like a lawyer anymore. His face had gone ruddy like a farmer's, and his body had thickened. He looked as seasoned and solid as one of the oak pillars holding up the vicarage walls. As senior church warden, Ted had made himself responsible for getting the vicarage into some kind of shape, negotiating with builders and plumbers and decorators. But well into April, the work had hardly begun. It looked as though Merrily was going to have to spend the first month of her ministry in a bed and breakfast. She was relieved in a way. A place this size, it was ridiculous. And an unoccupied third floor, full of dust and echoes.